coughing and spluttering these days, you'd be rightly told off. But prior to COVID, people were doing that all the time and bringing in germs.
I went in on Monday and the air was so dry. I started coughing. People gave me weird looks. So I just stayed in for the rest of the day. Well, I stayed in for the rest of the week.
Yeah. So a cough or a sniffle is like these days. You get death stares and you kind of deserve it. You know what I mean? Yeah. So totally get it. Anyway, we're live, everybody. Welcome to Brain Food Live on Air. It's episode 143. Bringing it to you every Friday. We have got a very interesting show for you today. This is a topic I think we've been talking about in TA for a long, long time, a decade or more. And I think the trend over the last decade has been talent acquisition seems to be like very keen to distance itself from HR, rowing away from that department and saying we're our own thing. We should do our own thing. We should report to marketing. We should report to operations. We should do something other than reporting to HR. That's been the story pre-COVID. But I just wonder whether that's actually a strategic error. Is that a mistake? Because as the world of work is shifting, it looks like there's more interesting things happening internally within businesses that have not necessarily got anything to do with talent acquisition from externally in. So does it make sense for us to reintegrate with HR? And if so, why? And if we agree on that, like how? Because, you know, our HR pissed off with us. You know, it's like the spurned spouse that, you know, we've decided to neglect for a couple of years. Now we're begging to come back. So anyway, that's going to be the topic of conversation. It'll be thrilling for us to talk about. Okay, let's just do some sound checks as usual. Everybody on Crowdcast, hello, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you are. Can you just give me some indication whether you can hear me okay? Just say yes, Hong, I can hear you. Just say that in the chat, please. That'll let me know that we're good. We should be going live on LinkedIn as well. So if you can hear me on LinkedIn, by the way, give me some sort of emoji, one of those weird emojis you can see on LinkedIn. Not your standard like or dislike, right? But let me know if the sound is okay there. And I hope to God we are definitely putting this out on the group as well. I really don't know. Lost all confidence there. But if you are and you can hear me on Facebook, give me a thumbs up. Okay, at least Crowdcast is saying okay, and that's the most important thing. Quick word from our sponsors today. Our sponsors are Oyster. They've been like a massive backer of Brain Food this year. I think they sponsored to the max on every channel, so expect to hear a lot more from these guys. Reason why I think is simply because they're very confident that they've got one of the most compelling products out there for the remote first world. Basically, what Oyster are offering you is the ability to hire anybody from anywhere, and they're just going to take care of the back office, going to take care of the compliance, the tax, the payroll, everything. The previous challenges you had when you're hiring somebody that you didn't anticipate may have come from a country you weren't expected to recruit from was, how are you going to pay that guy? How are you going to pay that person? Are you going to have to set up an entity? Are you going to have to do all of those things? You don't need to do any of that. Just sign up to oyster.com or is it oysterhr.com and you will be fine. So I'm going to share the link with you down there. If you are kind of investigating or have got any plans to kind of look at the global talent pool, you should be looking at something like Oyster HR or one of their few competitors. I think there's only really three companies in this game. And one of those companies is going to like win a very, very big part of the global business, I think. So anyway, Oyster HR, one of those folks, so go check them out. Okay, we've got a change of pace today because we've got Christine Ng with us. Hi, Christine. Good to see you. You're doing all right?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good to have you on the show. Thanks.
Sorry.
I know you've been ill. So thanks for joining us, you know.
All good. All good. Good to see everyone. And always good to be back, Hong.
Yeah, absolutely. And have you moved to a new place, by the way? Did that happen? Is that a new
house? No, not yet. In the next few weeks. So we're actually packing tomorrow. I just have a different view today of a bike.
All right. Yeah, I was going to say, it looks kind of like a Mediterranean type of vibe, you know, with that facility in the back and stuff. Kind of looks cool. Anyway, okay, cool. So Christine, let's get on with it. Did you read the newsletter? Have you had the time? And if you did, what was interesting? If you didn't, why not?
Yeah, a lot to unpack this week. I think, you know, first one to call out is Jason Liu's, how much do recruiters make? It made me realize maybe I should be moving over to San Francisco. obviously, you know, money is not the motivating factor, and not taking into account, you know, cost of healthcare and rents and stuff over in the US. But, you know, it's really cool to see the transparency of data of how much recruiters are making over there. I say over there being the US. And it's also great to see the progression levels. I think, you know, there's always that kind of misconception. You kind of start off as a junior and then a sourcer, you become, you know, quite like independent of your role. And then, you know, what happens after you become a head of or VP level, right? So it's cool to see the progression over in the US. You've got, you know, leads, recruiting leads, managers, senior managers, director, VP level, C level. So it was a lot to unpack. But yeah, that was really cool to see. And thanks for sharing.
Do you think that the US is more structured in terms of career paths than elsewhere in the recruiting space? Because they talk about levels, and I think that's very much from tech, and everyone seems to understand what levels is. Whereas in the UK, I get the feeling that it's a little bit less formal, and it's like we're not quite sure what that, you know, we're still using senior and junior, like we're using descriptive adjectives, aren't we, rather than, you know, literally creating these levels, I guess.
Yeah.
You know anything about this?
Yeah, and funny, actually, I mean, it's quite relevant to this topic today, but, you know, in companies I've worked for, which have historically had an HR team before a TA team, you just tend to match up the levels of the talent roles with the HR titles, right? So it would be like, you know, HR business partner after a manager, and then HR director. So you're kind of revolving and evolving with the HR titles. But yeah, I think you're right in that sense. We're probably, you know, a couple of years behind. So
it's interesting because, by the way, I've just shared Jason's post on the link, the chat stream there. Do check it out. I mean, basically, he's just used a product called Levels FYI, which is essentially a crowdsourced tool where people kind of submit their salary and compensation data anonymously, and everyone kind of trusts that and then say, okay, this is what the levels are. So if you're going from one big tech company to another, you can sort of get an idea as to how much you should be negotiating for. And it turns out there's recruitment data in there as well. So he just pulled out the recruitment data and say, okay, this is what you should be paid. And as you say, Christine, there's some like eye-popping numbers out there. Sure. You know, I think was it that even sub-manager level, you're looking at 200 plus, right?
Yeah.
200K plus.
15 years experience, you could be expecting like $500,000 US.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
What are these numbers?
It's big cash. But I looked at that and I thought, look, that can't be that has to be like quite a narrow milieu. It has to be Silicon Valley. It has to be big tech. It has to be like billion-dollar unicorn type of businesses. Definitely, it's not something that makes sense to a lot of people listening to this show, I think, given our global reach. Yeah. And I'm still seeing jobs posted in the UK that 45-50k type of level, you know, for an individual contributor, which I thought, hang on, that's probably, you know, a little bit low, but it's still getting pushed out there. So I'm thinking, you know, that there isn't a huge amount of consistency in terms of the salary levels globally, for sure. And even in the UK differently. What is an interesting context to this, though, is what happens when recruitment teams do distribute and become more globalized.
Yep.
Because that probably means that there will be salary depression is the truth. Because you're going to be recruiting people that can afford to live in a cheaper place. California is super expensive. You might need to earn $500,000 to have a standard living there. Yep. You don't need $500,000 to live in Rio. You know, you don't need $500,000 to live in Mexico or a different type part of the world where, you know, a much smaller absolute salary would do. So yeah, it's going to be interesting to know. Does remote lead to salary depression? I think probably does, you know. Anyway, here's another one.
The other one, probably Personio's 2021 100% offer acceptance rate. Very impressive. Not plugging in here, but we just implemented Personio as well. That was a really interesting read. I think it was just nice to get a refresher on, you know, what the recruiter's role should be when it comes to the whole candidate offer process. I mean, of course, you know, it's our role to be a partner and an advisor. And, you know, we know this, right? Personalizing the experience. But I think he really stresses on not just focusing on the company culture, but, you know, the personal development aspect, right? Like, what have you learned throughout the entire interview process as a recruiter to help them, well, close the offer much quicker, so you can tailor the offer and say, look, you know, during your time with us, you're able to work on X, Y, Z, things that you actually picked out in the process. And of course, you know, not a one-person job, right? Always looping your stakeholders. But that was impressive. 100%.
It was, and that's going to be kind of setting us up for another Brain Food Live topic, by the way, because I do want to use that as the kind of a lead to it. Like, how do you improve your offer acceptance rate? Because for sure, in this candidate-driven market, it's getting harder to close candidates, isn't it, folks? I mean, let me know. Are you tracking your offer to reject rates? And have they got worse? Let me know in a comment, because I think that probably it must be the case that it's got worse over time, given the fact that abundance mindset, lots more opportunity, seemingly a lack of talent. It's harder to get people through the door. It should mean it's harder to get them closed. And if people have had success in doing this, for whatever reason, they're prepared to share that information, that's worth consuming. So we're definitely going to talk about this in a Breakthrough Live in future. I'm prepping March as we speak, so it's probably going to be March. So follow the channel here if you want to get notified on that particular show. Okay, give us one more, Christine.
I think this one I shared on Twitter as well. It's the CTO of OnDeck, Andreas Klinger.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that was great read, you know, very kind of simple and snappy, which is, you know, always helps. But, you know, his whole thing was about how not to burn out your first few employees. This is, I think, based on experience working at, you know, Product Hunt and CoinList and stuff. It is very engineering focused, but, you know, there's a lot to learn from it, like how to establish trust, how to deliver good feedback. I think one thing that really stuck with me was not confusing autonomy and abandonment. So his experience, yeah, I mean, because his experience working with founders, and I've seen this before, you know, you have founders that say, oh, you know, hire people that cover your blind spots, hire people better than you, and then get out of their way, right? But there's a difference with getting out of their way versus actually giving them enough to do well, right? So in principle, you know, how do you ensure that they succeed in their role? Good onboarding process? Are you sharing your learnings, you know, your failures, etc.? So yeah, that really resonated with me. Abandonment.
That's a really good point, because there is in management culture, it's like hire great people, get out of the way, is turned into like some sort of mantra, and we all kind of think it's just true. But exactly as you say, at what point is getting out of the way abandonment? Like, are you like neglecting the person exactly. that's been brought in and they're just assuming they should solve the problem?
Yeah.
And this guy, I mean, I love it when practitioners, non-recruiting specialists, by the way, I love it when they talk about recruiting, because they're kind of stripped off all of the HR speak and all of the jargon. Yeah. They're not overly careful with how they talk. They're prepared to generalize. They're basically prepared to just tell you as it is. And this guy, you know, I think quite a senior fellow, wasn't he? Sort of CTO type figure. And he's just laid it down. And I agree, the writing style was awesome. It was like literally just bullet points.
But
must read. I mean, did I share that link? Yes, I did.
Yeah.
Definitely share that. I think it was originally a blog post, but it's also a Twitter thread as well. But really, really fascinating. Okay, let's move on to the topic du jour. Christine, I haven't even asked you your opinion on this. So I've just kind of gone with the high level. But firstly, do you agree with me that TA had a moment where it was trying to like distinguish itself very clearly from HR, even to the point of being a little bit disrespectful to HR, let's say? Do you agree that's the case? And what do you think the situation needs to be now and what it should be going forward?
Yeah, I think there's always been like a us versus them kind of mentality, right? Like, God, you know, why? What's taking so long with contracts? Do they not understand how much time has gone in to secure the candidate? But I 100%, I think the last few roles I've been in, we've always worked very collaboratively with HR. You know, you think about the entire employee experience, it technically doesn't end after the employee has signed the contract, right? Like my view is always, you know, you are still in charge of that person until they pass probation. Because, you know, if they're gone after probation, you still got to backfill that person, right? So I think there's definitely, you know, even if not kind of in the same team, then a close collaboration between TA and HR.
Do you know why, what's your theory as to why HR, sort of why TA at one point was keen to distinguish itself from HR? Did you have some thoughts on that?
Well, I think it's tricky. I think because TA, there's such a big element of, you know, a lot of sales in what we do, right? We do the employer branding, we got to get out there, we got to, you know, do events. And sometimes maybe the process that we have for HR on the HR side kind of catches up with us, right? So I reckon a lot of it might be just born out of frustration of not being able to do what the TA team actually needs to do without being bogged down by the process. So I reckon, you know, if you're able to fix that processy bit, happy days.
Yeah, so you're saying basically the HR is a little bit more, so recruiting is a bit more loose in terms of compliance, let's say. I think we can agree with that. We're interacting with the external market, so we have to be a little bit more salesy, of course. HR typically doesn't do that. The internal, they're looking at process efficiencies, they're looking at compliance, and those two things can sometimes be in tension. Yeah, very interesting. I'd be interested to hear from HR folks as well, by the way. Like, what's your thoughts on your relationship with the recruitment function? Do they report into HR? Do you see them as below? Do you see TA people as very much a subset of HR? Do you see it as separate? Which one do you prefer? You know, let us know what your thoughts on all of that is, because today is what we're going to try and explore. Okay, let's bring on some of our guests, and we'll see what everyone has to say about this. We're going to go first with who is available. Crikey, I'm going to have to type things now. Let's have a look. Oh, there he is, Kevin Green. Let's bring him on. Our friend Kevin Green, who I think may be making his debut here. Which is amazing because, you know, Kevin has been a long time kind of target guest, I think is the way to call it. So bring Geraldine as well. We're going to bring six people on, folks. So I hope this is not overload, but it's all happening. Just strap in, get ready for it. It's going to be exciting. Tell you what's going to happen, though. I think it's not going to work because I think six is the absolute maximum that we can get on screen at one time. Oh, there's our first amazing guest. It's Joe Weech. Joe, how are you doing?
Good. How are you all?
Great to see you, Joe. There's Adam Gordon. Adam, new role today as the guest and commentator.
I am not Kevin. I am not Kevin Green.
No. Disappointing. By the way, we'll talk about your Centre Parcs experience a bit. And there's Geraldine as well. Geraldine Butler-Wright. How are you, Geraldine?
Hey, I'm good. Thank you. Enjoying being here already.
Great to see you. Okay, let's do some intros whilst Kevin gets on. Joe, do you want to go first? Can you intro yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Joe Weech. I'm here in the Washington, D.C. area of the United States, and I love all things HR and talent acquisition. So I'm a little bit split that way, but I love the marriage between the two. I think that when they collaborate, things can really work well within companies.
Fantastic. Great to see you back on the show, Christine. Adam, I think everyone knows you anyway, but do quickly introduce yourself. Who are you? What it is you do?
Sure. I'm Adam Gordon. I'm co-founder and CEO at Candidate ID. I've been in recruitment for 23 years. I've got qualifications in marketing, and I believe that recruitment is 98% sales and marketing.
Yeah, excellent. Thanks for setting your stall out there. And Geraldine, can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What it is you do?
Yeah, so actually you can call me G. G's fine. Geraldine's a mouthful and always sounds like I'm about to get into trouble. So G's fine. I'm the Chief People and Culture Officer at health tech company called Healthily. We're on a mission to help 1 billion people through self-care. I come from a recruitment background and I've gone into HR. I have very definite thoughts on this, so I'm looking forward to sharing those with you. And it's a pleasure to be on the call today.
Fantastic.
So thanks for involving me.
No, you're very welcome, Geraldine. I know you as Geraldine, so I'm going to keep calling you unless you're really upset by it. Okay, and there's Kevin. There's Kevin Green. Kevin, great to see you. Can you quickly introduce yourself? Who are you? What is you do, sir?
Hi, everybody. Hiya, Hung. I'm Kevin Green. I'm the Chief People Officer at a business called First Bus, which is part of First Group, FTSE 250 in the UK, but with operations in Ireland and in Europe. And prior to that, I was the chief exec of the Recruitment and Employment Confederation for a 10-year period. So know the in-house and the agency sector really, really well. And this is something I'm really passionate about. I've never heard so much nonsense in all my life about people talking about, let's go off and do our own thing, let's be independent, because actually, you know, we've got to do a lot about improving the candidate experience and then improving the people experience. Mm-hmm. And for me, it's one journey, you know, one life cycle, and we need to think about our people from beginning to end.
Right. Well, Kevin, you've already set your stall out, so let's start with you. you're saying it's nonsense. So the premise I started this conversation off with was that there was a movement to try and separate HR, TA from HR? I mean, did we experience the same thing, or was I just in a filter bubble?
I've sort of banged on about this a lot, because when I go to events with TA professionals, whether it's Recruitment 100, 100 or RecFest or whatever it is, there's always a few that are going, well, I think we've got to do our own thing and we shouldn't be part of HR. So I think there's been a movement. Now, some of it, I think, is about maturity. I think some of it is around the TA being a sort of a younger function. I think there's also a cultural dynamic at play. I think people that are often HR specialists or been generalists see perhaps the TA function as a bit young, a bit of an upstart, a bit of a disruptor. And you're right, HR historically has been about process and policy and that. But actually, the HR function over the last 5 to 10 years has changed radically as well. And I think they understand that this is about culture and leadership and environment. And actually, what we really need is, to create a way of working together where we build on the best of each population so that we can provide great candidate experience, where we can go out and sell our jobs and position the business well, have a great EVP. But we've also then got to deliver that EVP. That's a promise to a set of candidates. And what you really don't want is, you guys or TA going out selling, come and work for us. We're wonderful. There's great coaching and development and the reward package. And then, 6 months later, people have bounced off the organization because we haven't been able to deliver on that promise because managers aren't coaching, because the culture isn't what we've said it is. So for me, if you're going to attract great talent and then retain great talent and then get all of that discretionary effort, we've got to be working collaboratively and in an integrated way to create something that works for our candidates and our people from beginning of the life cycle right the way until they leave us.
Okay, freeze frame on that, because I think that's a really interesting point to kind of maybe dive a little bit deeper on. This idea that the employee experience, the candidate journey segues into employee experience. It's better done if we're in the same holistic unit rather than two separate groups of people where we're separated, we don't report into HR, we don't do, we don't do this, we just hand over candidates. That potentially is a break in the candidate journey. That's bad UX, that's bad disappointing EVP. Very interesting point on that. Okay, let's explore this in a little bit more depth. Do you have any experience where that has actually happened? Joe Weech, do you have any experience where you've worked in companies where there has been a slight structural difference, where TA has been in HR as part of, or where HR TA stood outside? Has that been part of your experience? And if so, did you discern any difference in terms of the treatment of candidates?
That is a really great question. One thing I saw trending in 2021 is the term people operations. Mm-hmm. And how that was working out was that HR, was part of people operations, talent acquisition, learning and development, and in some companies, corporate operations. They were all under the umbrella of people operations. They were in their individual swim lanes, if you will, because they all had different types of responsibilities. But I found that they all needed to integrate. So when I went to Clements, that was one of the first things that I did, was to create the different departments, so that they would all be separate but equal. Talent would need to coordinate most closely with the marketing, department, so team marketing. And the people in HR would have to collaborate very closely with team finance, and there were so many different ways that they had to collaborate together. But to Kevin's point, you really need to have a good way of, having talent attraction. But if you're bringing someone into an organization and they're not having the same experience, once they're hired, then you're going to have a revolving door. So it's very imperative for there to be a oneness, if you wish, the alignment, between the mission, vision, values, where you give a great candidate experience, but then someone coming in will have a great experience being career pathed and also being provided the same type of equitable opportunities, not just for growth, but even for daily tasks.
Yeah, very interesting. Okay, Adam, go to you because I think you're the only dissenting voice on the screen here. Where you know you're clear. I'm presuming that this is your position, but you're clear that actually recruiting is more marketing related. Maybe you should pop out from HR. What are your thoughts about the idea that actually EVP is better if TA is within HR? I mean, that seems to be quite a compelling argument made by Joe and Kevin there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. So my first retort would be, I certainly am not suggesting that TA should be in marketing or any other business function. It definitely shouldn't. That would be completely wrong. TA is, to me, 90-something percent sales and marketing discipline. And the only thing that's not a sales and marketing task within TA is assessment. Everything else is about attracting people and achieving influence with them to come and take that job. What Kevin said around the link between attracting the person, bringing them in, and then delivering the experience is part of what I would refer to as an infinity loop. So you've got to have, if I'm PwC, I want a relationship with somebody the day they start university to go and train to be an accountant, right through to the point that they've retired, whether that person is considering me alongside my peers to come and work for, whether they have come and joined me or they've gone to my competitor, when they're working for me, when they've left me, they're an alumnus, they've gone into industry, they might come back, they've gone to a competitor, they might come back, they might go away again, they become an alumnus again. And you know, the relationship between an employer like that and somebody with the skills that they hire for should start before they've entered the workplace and up until the point that they've retired. So
stop pressing there, Adam. That's definitely ideal, right? I mean, I don't think anybody would be horrified at suggesting that this is what we should get to. But most organizations would recognize there's like significant resource problems to make this happen. It's basically like, who does this?
It's just a communication workflow, really. It's just communications. You've got people in different pipelines according to where they are in their relationship with your organization, whether they're internal or they're external, they're a candidate, they've just left you. They go into a different type of relationship with the organization, but it should be an ongoing relationship that you as the employer are actively nurturing. But the point is that I agree with exactly what Kevin just said, and I also completely agree with what Joe just said about the concept of this people operations area, which probably does include HR and it does include TA and it does include other things. The reason why I'm not entirely sure that TA should be reporting directly into HR is because I look at all the different disciplines within HR, and my personal belief is that TA is the most important one. It's the one that can achieve the most value to an organization. And actually deeper within that, what is the most important part of that? I'm a big believer in the five whys as a diagnostic. What's the most important part of that? It's all employer brand. What do we want to do as a company? We want to get the most best people to want to come and work for us at the right time. Therefore, every single part of HR should be serving that. That's probably where I've got to on the subject. Whether that's within HR or people operations or something else, or whether employer brand is the top of the tree and you know all the other HR bits support that, the delivery of that, that's what my thoughts are about it.
That's a statement. Sorry, I'm just going to add one more bit there. I think we've got a couple of looks earlier, Adam, when you said that. I think a couple of years ago, I probably would have agreed with you. I think, you know, different stages of a company, like in a hyper-growth startup, right, where hiring is the most crucial thing. I can definitely see why that is the case. But I think, you know, at maybe a more mature business where you got to focus on, like what Joe mentioned earlier, L&D, career paths, et cetera, you know, that's probably where HR comes in. So, yeah.
Are they not all part of the employer brand, though? What am I going to learn at that organization? That's all L&D. What am I going to learn at that organization? That's part of the employer brand. What's my career path at that organization?
I think a better term than brand would probably be employee experience, though. I think brand has that sort of marketing kind of connotation intent about it.
The experience is when you work there, though. So the experience is not for the people that are not working there. That's why brand is, I believe, a better term.
Let's stop on this. I want to bring in Geraldine onto this conversation because you've kind of worked maybe quite differently from a lot of people on screen here, but you've worked as a TA specialist interacting with HR, and then you've actually adopted HR responsibilities and kind of doing like a CPO kind of role. So talk us through about your journey in that sort of with those interfaces, and how does that affect your thinking about where TA belongs?
Yes, I mean, I've worked for a variety of organisations in size, and predominantly, though, there has been a trend that recruitment has been part of HR. And I've seen it to be incredibly beneficial because you get that overview of the entire business through various aspects of people operations, right? So you're able to, as a recruiter, understand how comp and bens work, understand more about how the culture has actually been evolved. And actually, also, it's very good for building relationships across the business where you're not having a separate relationship from the HR business partner, from the TA function. You know, you're not actually wasting their time. You're one unit. So actually, just to the point about, you know, TAs being the most important function, I do think we're really careful there, right? There shouldn't be any favourite children on this, because actually there's no point getting people in the door if they're not going to actually stick around. Retention is also massive because it costs a fortune to hire people. So you've got to be really, really careful. I think all parts need to be as equal as possible. I found that transition into HR, being part of that sort of overall HR function, has been actually very beneficial from a personal perspective, because I've been able to add to my career different components of HR that have enabled me to progress and learn more about the business and just progress in my career. So actually, I think to kind of, you know, cut that opportunity off for people would be a great shame, because there are those career paths that don't have to be linear. They don't have to be TA and that's it. And especially if you're working in a small organization, that can be very limiting.
Yeah, I love a couple of things that you said there, really important. Number one, like the perception of hierarchy is very, very important. I think part of the problem that's kind of animated this idea that TA needs to be a separate department is probably due to how it started off as like an adjunct of HR, right? It was like one of the things that HR did, right? You, a HR administrator, go stick a job out on whatever job board. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly you did that a few times. Before you know it, you did some recruiting. And it was like a very administrative type of task, low-level task back in the day. Mm-hmm. And because of that lack of confidence, we'll be talking about institutional lack of confidence next week, by the way. Because of that, like, historical lack of confidence in the function, there was this sense of, look, actually, we are important. Actually, we should step out from this sense of us being just a unwanted, you know, unhappy, sort of unfavored child of HR, if you like, and be our own thing. But actually, how we're going to reinvent this is recognize that we need to equalize all of these departments, because we're all trying to build a function here. Go ahead, Kevin.
I think the key point is, and the bit I suspect we're all sort of violently agreeing to some extent, which is that in lots of organizations, the people dynamic, you know, the understanding of the value created by treating people well, attracting the right talent, rewarding them well, developing and growing people, is still misunderstood. And I think that's the key battle. If you in most organizations, that's the argument that needs to be won. You know, it could be Adam's EVP, it could be people operations. Let's not get hung up on the names. Actually, what we're trying to do is to create a great employee experience. We're trying to give people great experiences as they join our organization. And we're trying to get, you know, make this a great place to work. People can develop, can grow, give of their best. Organizations get discretionary effort, can compete on the human dynamic side of their organization. So for me, I think we do need to be careful that we don't end out, you know, falling out with ourselves around, oh, I'm a comp and den specialist and I'm a learning and development specialist. Mm-hmm. I do organizational design. Because actually, if we don't work collaboratively in an integrated way, we're not going to deliver the organizational benefit that a great people function can deliver.
Yeah, and actually to that point, I think there's a bottom line piece here, right? We've got to reset. you know, when you if you look back, say, 5-10 years ago, you know, your recruiters, to your point, how they were a little bit like the underdogs. They kind of just dealt with, they kind of just get that job, get it fired, and then we started to professionalize a little bit more. And then you had human resources, which was pretty much human remains, right? It's where fun went to die. And we were like, is it in the policy? Computer says no, that's who we were, right? So now it's kind of like, okay, let's be a modern people function here and get on so we can actually deliver with the business, not for the business, with the business. And I think this is an ideal opportunity where we've all kind of gone and done our stuff and our thing. We found ourselves, and now it's the time to be mature about creating that great experience end to end for the candidate and the employee for that whole life cycle, and kind of leave the egos at the door. And quite frankly, who reports into whoever? Like, is that really important? Can we just get over it and get on with our business and our work? There we go.
I agree. Let me just say this one thing. I agree with everything Gerald said, apart from that last line, because I think ultimately the reporting lines aren't equal, so to speak, and you're hierarchically in one edge or another. You can't avoid the politics involved in there and the personalities and stuff like this, and everyone's got an ego. You can make every effort to leave it at the door, but they're going to bring a bit of that ego in there. And ultimately, I think it does matter how you structure it. So I'm a structuralist. I think if you structure it right, you can resolve a lot of those relationship problems. But where a lot of relationship problems emerge is when the structure isn't correct. Right, I interrupted someone. Who did I interrupt? Please interrupt me.
Oh, that was probably me. Yeah, I was going to just speak to both Geraldine and to Adam about the reporting structure, because in the last 2 years, I've served a number of organizations, and I found that depending on what the leadership thinks about recruitment will totally affect whether or not you're going to be able to be successful in reporting into that function. For example, anywhere, I look at a number of C-suite people, depending on whatever C role they had, and they mainly thought about that it was about using LinkedIn Recruiter or Indeed. You know, we're 100% in total post and pray mode. So they didn't understand the need for identifying a functional and good ATS, you know, to be able to have just as the very basic, you know, baseline. In addition to that, there were HR Karens, if you will, who feel like since they've had to do recruiting when they were a generalist, you know, that they know what recruiting is and they get their information from SHRM, which, as we all know, would not be the best place to get, you know, up to the minute, you know, what should we be doing, you know, to optimize, you know, talent acquisition in our organization. So I think it's very, very important to ensure that no matter to whom TA would report, that person be 100% competent from the standpoint that they don't get their information from past, you know, performances, like from the last 10 years. But if they haven't gotten any updates in the last 2 years, then they really need to have an education, if you will, or, you know, be provided with training to understand how does it work now. Same thing with hiring managers, you know, people who are incensed that you would want to take them through interview training. But if they haven't had interview training in the last 2 years, they need to be educated on the fact that there are many different ways that things are being interpreted, whether it be laws or whether it be best practices and that sort of thing, in terms of even asking questions about work from home. Some things in the United States are legal to ask, and many of the things that people think that they should ask are totally not legal. So I think that, again, to your point, Adam, and to Geraldine, it's really important that to whomever TA reports, it needs to be somebody who understands how TA is functioning in 2022.
All right. I want to just say that might be almost the cutting of the Gordian knot, so to speak. So I think the structuralism is correct, but actually that is just a proxy for reporting into a person that respects what you're doing. Like if I've seen situations where HR and recruiting has just been thrown over to somebody, someone has to, you know, lead this, and it's kind of like very much a neglected function. People don't respect it that's no good. You need to just have someone who cares about this function, believes in it, and wants it to do well. Question is, how do you ID that? Like, is there a way, if I'm a job seeker and I'm looking at a HR job or a TA job or whatever, and I think, oh, it might be quite interesting to look at who this reporting structure is. Is there a way for us to surface out, look, is it reporting into a leader in the business that cares about HR? Like, how would we do
that? Well, I mean, you know, I mean, I think any, you know, I would say to, I'd spend a lot of time talking to sort of HR professionals about, you know, their job. And quite often HR people go, oh, the leadership don't get it. They, you know, I always go,
very common.
Why are you working there then? You choose where you work. Mm-hmm. Work for someone, a chief people officer or a senior HR person, or even someone that's, you know, in marketing. To some extent, I think the point's absolutely right. Do they get what great TA looks like? Do they understand the power to the organization? But actually, you've got to ask questions. You know, when you're going for a job, you have you've got choice. You can test them. You're interviewing them to find out whether this is the environment where I can give my best, where I can be my best self and deliver huge value. So, you know, wherever I've been, I'm going to integrate HR. Whenever I get appointed as a chief people officer, I'm going to bring the team together. And I want the best of all those different disciplines, but I want to mash up. I want them to work creatively to create the right people strategy. And we've really got to be clear about how we influence the rest of the business. How do we talk about what great HR and what great people management looks like? And that's the key. So you choose who you work for.
The reason why I love Brain Food Live is because we actually have a diagnostic process here, because I think we've uncovered the reason why there is like some motivation for some TA practitioners to move away from HR. And maybe it is because the individual that they're reporting into doesn't respect that function. Like, it's not necessarily about the relationship per se, it's about the human relationships between the two groups. And if that's not right, that's never going to be fixed. So yeah, that's that seems now to be like super obvious now that we've uncovered it, but hey, you know, it took a show to do it. Geraldine, you about to say something?
Yeah, so I think we shouldn't get our knickers in a twist on this, right, about who they report into, because it's actually, I'd say it's a subsidiary issue in many ways. What's more important is about how the perception of HR, the perception of TA actually within the business, who it reports into. Yeah, you could argue about that, you can move it into different parts, but actually it's more important about how people are actually considered within the business. And actually, when you're interviewing for companies, and it's often, you know, buzzword bingo, right, with a lot of CEOs, but no, you know, people first, etc., then you go in the door and you soon pretty realize quickly that that is not the case. So actually, it's about getting under the hood during those interview processes and finding out, yeah, who reports to you, that can change tomorrow. But actually, how important are people practices within that business? How do people practices live and breathe? That's way more important than if they're reporting to a COO, a CFO, a CPO, a CEO, CPTO for crying out loud, whatever. But that is what's important. It's the actual root
And I'm just building on Geraldine's point. It's actually how the line managers, how operations and strategy and sales and the rest of the people perceive people within the organization. That's when you know you've got it. Have you got an environment where actually the HR functions listen to? You've got to remember that the HR had a debate for 20 years about seat on the board. You know, I went through all of that 10 years ago. We need to have a voice on the top table because no one's listening to us. Well, if you're not working for a chief exec and operations directors and sales and finance directors that get the people stuff, then go and work somewhere else, because you'll never be able to really create the right environment for the people.
That's actually another reason why TA might have wanted to roll away from HR, because of the perception that maybe HR didn't have the respective department within the business. And because we were part of that department, it was like, oh, we're not getting the respect and it's not our fault because we're really good. You know, we are dealing with all this legacy. If we step out, then maybe we can negotiate our own reputation and status and do it that way. Adam, I know you want to say something, but I want to do a quick kind of freeze frame because we always do this at the middle of every show. I think it's really important that the conversations that begin on Brain Food Live don't end on Brain Food Live. We only have an hour to talk about these things. Clearly, it takes more time and more conversations for these things, for, you know, real ideas to emerge. So we always take this moment for everyone who's watching this to go and share their LinkedIn in the chat stream right now and connect with everyone else who's watching the show. Because you've got wonderful guests on the panel here. You've got people who are commenting amazing comments in the chat stream. Absolutely no reason why you shouldn't use this opportunity to expand your network now and talk to people that care about this topic. So take a moment, get your LinkedIn profile, share it in the chat stream, and make sure you connect with everyone there. And by the way, you can actually replay this show and go back and reconnect. So you don't have to do it straight away, but share the your LinkedIns now, and then take your time later on when you do a replay and connect with everyone else here. Adam, let's go to you. You're about to make a comment there, so go ahead.
Yeah. So I've agreed with almost everything everybody said here, and I just wanted to respond to a point that G made earlier, which again I've agreed with almost everything G said. But the G said, there shouldn't be any favored children within, like, let's call it HR, but there has to be, because if you chunk it up to different business functions within an organization, some are clearly of more importance than others. So in almost every business, sales and finance are more important than, let's say, facilities and purchasing. They just are. So presumably the same could be said within the different areas of HR or the people function or whatever it is. Some of them can make a much bigger strategic impact than others, which are maybe more compliance type functions. Would you agree or disagree generally, people on the panel, with my point?
I mean, there's certainly politics in play in any organization, and different functions are perceived in different ways. No doubt about that. But I think the key for me is around an organization strategy. How does it compete, and how does its people strategy really support that? So is it about research and development, going out and hiring the best and creating a great environment where we develop great products? Because the people stuff goes through most organizations. It's a key component of competitive success. And the problem is that lots of CEOs and organizations still don't quite get that. So for me, if you're a great TA professional, you want to work in an environment where people's understood and it's linked to competitive advantages understood, and then you're going to be working in the right type of environment. So for me, I think we need to be careful not to create sort of a competitive hierarchy situation. I think it's the deployment of a great people strategy to make a business successful is really what we've got to find. We've got to create. And I think to do that, we need to have, great specialists in each of those areas of HR working as one team.
So I completely agree with that.
Adam, I need to interrupt because we need to move on. And I think this is potentially a diversion from where I want to go to next. I think to level this one off from my perspective, I think you're probably right. I do agree there's different functions are going to be more important based on the survival of the organization, right? If you're going to take it at an existential type of level. But at the same time, it's not necessarily useful to explicitly have the hierarchy of that type. And what you really want to do is try and get everyone pulling in the same direction, pointing in the same way. So it's almost like, yes, you might be right, but why would you want to make a big deal out of it? What you really want to do is just point to the direction everyone wants to go to. Anyway, I want to move on to this point. So really, we've only got 10 minutes left. And I want to talk about how the changing shape of business, distributed working, increased requirement for flexibility, greater focus on redeployment, internal mobility, stuff like this, right? Data-driven type of more people analytics internally within the business, more information. Are all of these new factors that have kind of really been brought to the fore in the COVID era kind of create more urgency for us to reintegrate into HR? Because it seems to me that lots of exciting things are happening, but if we want a part of that, we kind of need to be in HR for it to happen, right? I mean, if we are just purely focused on external in to hire, we're not going to get involved with any of this internal mobility. What are your thoughts on this? Christine, you want to say something?
Yeah, I think, it happened when, I was put on furlough during lockdown. So I think you very quickly realize if you're not hiring, what are you doing, right? And I think I very quickly had to, upskill myself in other areas and get involved in other projects, which was, L&D, internal training, and things that I never done in the past. So, you know, I think you just have to mentally kind of prepare yourself and ensure that you're growing laterally in other areas of HR. You know, touch wood, hopefully that moment's not going to come again. But I think that was an interesting experience.
It was a weird moment in our recruitment world, right? Because basically the global economy more or less went in deep freeze, and suddenly recruiters had to stop recruiting. A lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people left their industries. Yeah. And this, again, we easily forget because it's rebounded back to such an extraordinary degree in 12 months. But 12 months ago, it was almost like I got to get out of HR recruiting because it's over for me. Adam, I don't know whether you can compartmentalize. I sense you're a bit upset, but we'll go back to this at some point. We just don't have the time. Bro, I'm going to come to you with this idea of, has the COVID scenario changed, sort of accelerated this idea that we should be interacting more with HR than we did before? What are your thoughts?
I don't think so. I don't think it's any more or less. It's always been vital the whole time. It's been really vital that there's been complete collaboration. I talked about that infinity loop earlier. Nothing's changed on that. But what I do think is that the COVID scenario has probably made a lot of companies more anti-fragile and has really made them able to perform at a higher level. And a lot of that is to do with people. And what it has done really well is it's accelerated the flexibility that employers have had to show for the way that they offer a variety of different types of working relationship contracts with the people they want to hire. Those organizations with the most flexibility will be the highest performing, in my opinion. Of course, something like FirstBus is an entirely different scenario because most people can't work from home, I guess, within the organization. But in a lot of FirstBus functions, they probably can and maybe they should. So it's accelerated a lot of good things, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the idea of, you know, recruiting more flexibly or recruiting people on different types of contract, that for me was a big shot across the TA bow, because TA typically focus purely on full-time employees. If you think about who's hiring the contractors and dealing with gig workers and stuff like that, that wasn't anybody, it wasn't TA. Someone else is dealing with that. But if that group is becoming a bigger component of the workforce, then obviously TA's responsibilities are going to shrink, and that's not a healthy place to be. Go to you, Geraldine, on this. Any thoughts on the impact of COVID with regards to TA's relationship with HR?
Yeah, actually, just from a TA perspective, I think we're forgetting one aspect, which is how much TA can actually offer HR when it comes to market intelligence. They're talking to candidates every day. They're finding out what their benefits are. They're finding out what makes them tick, what's going to be a compelling EVP. So actually, if you separate those two, you're actually taking away a really valuable source of free information for a company that's going to help you close some fantastic candidates. So I think that's a really important point I just wanted to raise, and especially during the COVID period as well, you know, and the transition as we've come out of it, you know, by being able to funnel that information, that intel into the wider HR proposition has been invaluable. And it's really, and it's been very important for us as a business as well to have that information sharing. That's just a point. You know, we're closing pretty much 95% of our candidates because we are listening to what people want. We're adapting our policies. We're adapting how we do business, and that is thanks to the boots on the ground and the TA function. Quite frankly, in many ways.
Yeah. I mean, can I respond? Because again, I think one of the things that I think that you've mentioned is a sort of a dichotomy. One is with that HR is getting more sophisticated. You know, we're thinking about internal mobility. We're looking at data and analytics more than we've ever done before. So at one level, we're getting more sophisticated. We're thinking about how we work within organizations. So I think there's that sort of development going on. But at the same time, I think one of the fundamentals about the pandemic is it's got people to go back to basics. It's created two questions, I think. Organizations, are we really treating our people as well as we should? And for individuals, I'm really rethinking where I work and why I work in that way. So, you know, what you're trying to do is to square those things. You know, we can get really clever and do things differently and understand our people. But in the root causes, how do we treat our people?
and individuals trying to make a review their lives and how they work and where they work and the hours they work, and trying to square those two things. And quite often that's a TA-led conversation, but actually internally, and that's a line manager and employee conversation. And I think there's a lot, going to Geraldine's point, that HR can learn from the TA conversation about how do you attract people, how do you really listen to them and what they want, and how do we amend our offering so that people want to continue coming here and working here and giving of their best. And just to go back to Adam's point, you're absolutely right. One of the things we're dealing with is we lost 17 people died as COVID on the front line, bus drivers in the UK. You know, we've had a really difficult environment. People were clapping bus drivers at the beginning of the pandemic, you know, as they drove the streets and took hospital workers to work and stuff. And also lots of our managers and lots of central services went home. And one of the things we've now got is some of our frontline staff going, well, hang on a minute, we don't feel that supported. It seems okay for those guys to work flexibly. And actually, we're still doing 39-hour weeks, you know, split shifts and working in quite a rigid way. So we're having to adapt a lot about what we do for frontline staff so that they get flexibility, they feel engaged, they can work in the way that they want to work to create some kind of parity and fairness.
Now, the pandemic has made it necessary for TA and for HR to be having regular stand-ups, you know, via like agile, you know, meetings, just simply because of the fact that the intel that TA gleans from the candidates when they're asking questions about hybrid work, asynchronous work, about all of the different types of things that would be provided in a work from home environment. So these conversations can't be had with candidates if HR isn't weighing in and being able to make changes, you know, to previous policies that existed 2 years ago that are totally not valid, you know, in today's working world. So I think that that will help to benefit every company when they are having those regular conversations.
That's actually a super important point. But one of the things that kind of occurred to me was this idea of recruiting remotely, let's say global recruiting and stuff like this. Suddenly, like recruiters are interacting with candidates where they have no clue as to what employment law might be. They have no clue about payrolling. They have no clue about any of this stuff, and they can't be expected to know. I mean, they've never been trained to recruit people from Spain when they're based in, you know, Nicaragua or whatever. But now here is what you potentially can do. And maybe HR doesn't even know how to do this, but if someone's equipped to figure it out, it probably is HR. So there definitely is that need to reconnect a little bit more. What about the, did someone want to say something there, or was that just echo? I think it was just echo, wasn't it? Okay, no worries. Moving it kind of further forward, in terms of if we're sort of speaking to a TA manager or a HR manager, either side, they have some problems with their counterpart in the other department, and they recognize that this is a problem, but they need to kind of resolve this situation. What's your like elder's advice, if you like, on how they should approach this? You know, what are your thoughts on this? I don't know whether anybody's got any experience with it. Some of us might have, some of us might not. But let's go around. I mean, Christine, any personal experience of this or any thoughts you want to share?
I think I might defer to the others for this one first.
Okay, ongoing problem.
Okay,
does someone want to pipe up and give this a shot?
Well, I think you've got first of all, you've got to create a common agenda. You know, I mean, I think from a people perspective, what are we trying to do? So what's important for us to be successful competitively? And then you start to go, and what does that mean? What talent do we need to bring into the organization? What capabilities and skills do we need to have within our organization for us to be successful? And, you know, HR's role or the people function is, once I've got some of that talent, how do I make it stay? How do I get it to give a, you know, to perform day in, day out? So I think it is two sides. So I think really it's about creating a common language, a common understanding of what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve as a people function. Because you've got to bring great talent in, and I've got to make it settle and land and perform every day. And actually, if we can do that, then you'll have the time to do the TA bit well, because I won't be throwing people out and you'll be on a hamster wheel just trying to recruit more people all the time. So again, we've got a shared outcome here, which is retain the talent we need, then we can make the strategic hires and do it well. If we don't do the cultural bit right, you're going to be running like a headless chicken just to bring people in, because we'll be throwing them out the other end. So we've got a shared objective. We've got to really articulate how we do that together. That would be my thing, is create that shared understanding of how the supply chain of great people management works from beginning to end.
I love that shared agenda. Okay, Joe, you got any thoughts on this? How do we kind of make a better relationship between TA and HR?
Mutual respect, you know, and being able to realize equal worth, different function. Because yes, TA has to bring in the talent. They have to be able to, you know, communicate that employer brand, but then HR needs to engage and to inspire and to retain. So it just is a matter of achieving company goals. You know, it really needs to be about mutual respect and also being humble enough to ask, you know, so what are you hearing? You know, not feeling like you always have to be the smartest person in the room, but, you know, it's like, what are you hearing? What are you reading? You know, what's trending right now? And just people sharing things that they learned on Recruiting Brain Food, for example.
Yeah. And by the way, Recruiting Brain Food, I try to include HR stuff because I think it's super relevant. It is still a bit skewed to TA, but as we go, as we evolve, and maybe as these departments get closer together, we will include more HR type topics. Okay, Adam, go to your side of it. How do you, what's your recommendation for if there is a problem between TA and HR? Like, what's your advice, managerial advice on how those folks within those groups can potentially improve their relationship?
That's a difficult question for me to answer because I've never run an HR business and I've never really worked in HR either. But I agree with everything that Kevin and Joe just said around, you know, I think everything is a communication issue, and communicating effectively what are our common goals is the most vital thing. I think that the communication from the CEO to the rest of the organization is actually the most important part of that, because then everybody knows exactly what their, you know, position is in achieving the company's objectives. Effective communication is really the answer, my default answer on anything like that.
But that's fine. I think ultimately it needs to be reemphasized. And communication is about listening, isn't it? It's about giving people the space to say, but also, you know, not kind of reconfirming what you think that person has said. I think it's so important, because otherwise you might run into a scenario where it's just misinterpreted. I think online in conversation is particularly dangerous for this, because there's you're not having any of the other cues, the visual, the sort of even the tonality is difficult to do if it's just text. And even videos we're doing now, I think it's slightly less effective than in person sometimes. So yeah, it's difficult. Okay, go to you, Geraldine. What are your thoughts on improving TA-HR relationships?
Get back to basics. Get to know each other. Sounds super simple, but we've kind of forgotten how to do that, right, over the last 2 years. So if the people function can't get personal, then how on the earth is the rest of the business going to do it, right? So find out what the blockers are in each other's lives. Find out when you derail, what kind of things do you do when you're feeling vulnerable, when you're having a crappy day? Like, what do you do when you're at your best? How do your colleagues know that? You know, these sort of getting under the hood, this is about me and sharing that, it will really, really help that relationship. If you can meet in person now, go and meet in person, go and have a couple of pints or a couple of cups of tea, or just get to know each other as people, and it will resolve a whole bundle of issues.
You know what? I think that's such amazing advice. It's almost like having a non-agendered conversation meeting, isn't it? I mean, I know it's good meeting practice. You're trained to do it, actually, as a recruiter, aren't you? You go into this meeting, make sure you have these bullet points. You're going to come out with this, with these action points. And it's like, that's in our brains. But in order to build relationships with people, oftentimes you need to throw the agenda out and just say, the agenda is to get to know this person. And to understand them a little bit more than I do right now. That's what I want to get out of this. And if you approach it in that way, then, as you say, Geraldine, a lot of these problems that might otherwise appear intractable will suddenly just melt away. Okay, Christine, last word to you. What are your thoughts? How do you kind of improve a relationship between TA and HR?
Yeah, I think what Geraldine just mentioned actually made me smile, because I just remembered back in the office. Now I'm the solo TA and HR, but in my last role, I remember going over to HR, be like, "Hey, you know, how's it going? You did that small talk. You know that contract? How's it going?" So you know, simply actually just going up to them, having a chat, and you know, building that relationship. I think you're totally right, and I think you totally forget that is such a key part of trying to get things done, is, you know, putting a face to a name, knowing who they are, and that actually helps tenfold when it comes to trying to get things done.
I've got another idea now for Brain Food Live, another episode. How do you do that in a remote only environment? Because I think when you're in office, you can actually go out. The excuse can be just go out and just see somebody, right? Pop to the floor, or you could drop a quick message saying, "Hey, do you fancy a drink later, or let's go for lunch?" Boom, you can do that. That's a good excuse. People can interrupt. There's no reason, that's no way that can happen if you distribute it. Would it feel a bit weird to say, "Hey, do you want to jump on a Zoom call for no reason?" You know, it doesn't seem to be a thing. So I want to explore, how do you have a no agenda kind of get to know you meeting in a remote only environment? Does anyone have any experience of this? It seems that we need to figure out how to do that a little bit better. Okay, that's about it, everybody. Thank you so much for your time. It's been an awesome show. I really appreciate you all joining and throwing your thoughts in. Kevin has had to leave, so thank you, Kevin, for joining us. Joe Weech, thank you so much for getting up early and joining us on the show. We'll love to see you back on Brain Food Live. So we'll see you at Recfest, I think, as well, aren't you? So you're coming over, which is amazing. You have a very good weekend. Geraldine, great to see you. I'm not sure when we get the chance to connect again, because I think that things are happening at your end, aren't they? When's the big moments?
A big moment. So baby is due at the end of March.
Well, listen, obviously, great to see you, and best wishes for everything. And, you know, if we get the chance to speak before then, then I'd look forward to do that.
And I'll keep reading the newsletter. I read it every Sunday. Sunday wouldn't be the same without it. So,
yeah, well, feel free to miss a few weeks. You got like more important things to get on with.
Everything.
Have a great weekend, Geraldine.
Take care. Bye.
See you. Bye, Adam, great to see you, man. Thanks for showing up. I know you had to drive in earlier today from Centre Parks and to join us for this. So great to have you as a guest, actually. You're much more cantankerous when you're a guest, I've noticed.
Yeah, you won't make that mistake again, yeah, by the way, I'm a guest, I'm allowed to speak. I don't just ask questions. I can actually
That's
give
not
my
happening
opinion.
Again. That's not happening again. No, yeah. Adam, you have a good weekend, man. I'll see you soon, okay?
Thank you.
Hi, Adam.
Cool. Okay, that's about it. Thank you very much, everybody. We'll see you whenever. We'll be back next week, by the way. We are talking institutional confidence, actually. Exactly this topic. Is TA institutionally less confident than it should be? And if so, what do we do about it? How do we actually elevate the department to the other parts of the business? How do we kind of, what do we do if we don't have the leadership to do that? Is there anything we can do operationally to improve? It's going to be a fantastic show. We've got some great guests to join us. Again, people who have themselves gone on that confidence journey, if you like. How do you build that professionally? I think all of us may forget that when we started, we were in a different position to where we might be now. You know, I remember my first certainly internal recruiting job, I was very shy. I had no clue who to ask. I was afraid of causing problems and so on. Totally different from where it is now, but it was a journey to get there. So follow the channel if you want to hear more about that. We'll be back on that next week. Okay, that's it. Have a good weekend, everybody. See you later.
See ya.
How are you doing? That was all right, wasn't it? A bit tired, yeah. But I think it's fine.
All good. We went a bit over, but good questions. Yeah,
that was shit, did we miss a question? Is only Kevin. Yeah. Kevin erroneously communicating a direct message as a question. I mean, that's a misuse of the platform, I would say.
It's good for speakers, I think. Definitely, that's like it could be a two-hour conversation easily.
They always are, you know. I mean, yeah. I don't know. I've been listening to more long-form podcasts, and I just really enjoy like the much longer ones. I know the idea is podcasts should only be 20 minutes, 30 minutes, yeah. Whatever. But I really get the ones that just drag on and on, like 2 hours and stuff, like having deep chats. I think they're really, really, really good.
Yeah.
This is because I'm walking a lot these days. But at the same time, Yeah, that's fine. It's behind the scenes content. You know what I mean? Is it worth doing 1.5? Probably too much. I think 1 hour is about right, isn't it? Anyway, listen, when you're better, let us know, because we've got to go to Sea Town. I went to Chinatown yesterday. Was it yesterday? The day before? Yeah, yesterday. Yeah, it's busy. It was rammed, like really, really busy, yeah, surprisingly.
We need to go. Maybe I saw you saw Farah the other week.
She's cool. Yeah, she's doing good.
Yeah, I was supposed to see her last week, but we cancelled as well. So yeah, we get to hang out. So yeah, maybe we'll get a date in the next few weeks.
Yeah, you let me know when you're feeling better and we'll sort something out, okay?
Yeah, sounds good. All right, cool. Well, good to see everyone.
All right, have a good weekend.
Ciao, ciao. Bye.